We are in Megillas Esther, Perek Hey, Pasuk Ches. Esther is now standing in front of Ahasuerus. As we know, she initially wanted to wait until she was called. She felt it was too dangerous and would be ineffective if she came to Ahasuerus now. And Mordechai told her that this is the time. If you're going to be the one that saves Bnei Yisrael, you have to act now. The Lashon he said was, "Umi Adayim Lais Kazois Higat Lamalchus." It could be that only for this moment, only for this time, you've come to be a queen, Bechlal, and to let the time go will mean that, or may mean that, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will bring the Geula from another direction, and you will be in danger because your usefulness will have come to an end. So Esther agreed. They fasted for 3 days, and then she came to the king. Getting to see him was very dangerous, but the Rebbeinu Shlom did many nisim, that he was in just the right place at just the right time, and he saw her, and he extended his scepter to her, and here she is. She invites Ahasuerus and Haman to a party. This, as the Gemara says, was done intentionally to confuse Ahasuerus, to confuse Haman, to make Ahasuerus think that perhaps there was something happening between Esther and Haman, to set the ground, sort of, to prepare the ground for her attack on Haman. And now the king says to her, with all the warmth and goodness of a husband to his wife, he says, "What is your request? Extremely generous. I'll give you up to half the kingdom. You just have to ask." What does Esther say? "Atan Esther, atoymer, atoymer, sheilosi vakashosi, im matzasi chem b'enei hamelech, if I find favor in the king's eyes, v'im ala melech toiv, losi ses sheilosi, v'lasi ses bakashosi. You know what I really want? Yovei hamelech v'haman ala mishte, the king and Haman should come to the party, ashe ese Elohim, that I will make for them, u'mocher ese kedvar hamelech, and tomorrow I'll do what the king wants." What on earth is going on over here? After 3 days of fasting, taking her life into her own hands, davening to the Rebbeinu Shlom to help her, he finally gets her in front of the king, and not only is she in front of the king, she catches him in the best mood ever. He's ready to give her whatever she wants, and why does she say, "Oh, let's wait a day, yeah, we'll talk tomorrow. Huh? Let's talk tomorrow." What's going on? Say what you want. Make your request. He's ready to do whatever you need. Why are you waiting for tomorrow? Who knows what can happen between today and tomorrow? In fact, tomorrow was almost fatal for Mordechai. Haman had a whole plan, of course. Hashem intervened and so forth. But the end is mechalanes. You're not supposed to be reliant upon Nisim. You got Haman over here. A fish in a barrel, shoot him. What are you waiting till tomorrow for? And she makes it sound like she's going to do the king a favor. Noch. Macher esek edvar hamelech. I'll do what you want. It's true, she implied other things there. She's going to tell him where she's from, etc. Do it now. Get this over with. Umi yadayim la'eis kazois. The ace is a time. Times are very precise and very exact. When the time comes to do something, you do it. What is she waiting for? Now this is a phenomenon that you find very often, specifically when it comes to the battles between Yisrael and Amalek. Where else? You find it in the Torah. When Moshe Rabbeinu, when Amalek came to fight with Yisrael b'Refidim, so Moshe tells Yeshua, you have to go out and fight with Amalek. V'yemer Moshe Yeshua, tzehi lachem ba'amalek. Then he adds the word, mocher, tomorrow, today. Why always tomorrow? And if it's tomorrow, so the Torah shouldn't tell us about it till tomorrow. The Torah should say, Amalek came to fight with Yisrael b'Refidim. And then the next day, and as we don't know which day it is today that we have to say tomorrow, we don't know how long Amalek was coming to fight with Yisrael b'Refidim b'chlal. So whatever Moshe told Yeshua to tell him, listen, go fight. What are you telling me about that? The day before he told him tomorrow. Why is it even relevant at all? Another place where we find it is at the end of the Megillah, when the Bnei Yisrael were given free rein to do whatever they wanted to the Amalekim. So they fought with them for one day, and they killed 500 people, and they killed the 10 sons of Haman. Achashverosh says to Esther, okay, good, enough, you got what you wanted. She says, give me one more day. I want also Machar. Give me also Machar. Nachatog. I want another day. Right? The question is, what is going on here with this Machar? Why always does it seem that with Amalek, Yidavka, wait for tomorrow, we wait for the Machar? So, to understand this, it's kedai to understand a little bit about who Amalek is, what they represent, where they are in the picture of the world, and then we can understand, perhaps, how we go about battling them, what is necessary for us to fight Amalek. The Zohar tells us a very interesting thing. It's very yadua that Amalek comes, I mean, literally they come from Esav, as we know. But they also have sort of spiritual forefathers who are Bilam and Balak. And it's hinted at in the names of Bilam and Balak. If you take the name Bilam, so you'll take the Beis and set it to the side for a moment, the Beis and the Lamed. It finishes with Ayin Mem. Balak finishes with Lamed Kuf. That's Amalek. If you take the first three letters of their name, so it's Beis from Balak, Beis Lamed from Bilam, you have Bavel. So you have Bavel Amalek. That's what the Zohar says. The Zohar says that these two characters that we meet in the Torah that were trying to destroy Bnei Yisrael, they were the source, in a spiritual sense, of Balak and Amalek. Now, we're not really discussing Bavel that much over here, although we all understand that on Purim, there was a confluence, there was a coming together of the powers of Bavel and Amalek. Achashverosh represents Bavel. Achashverosh was married to Vashti, the granddaughter of Nebuchadnezzar, who was the great king of Bavel that took over Yerushalayim and destroyed the Beis HaMikdash. And he was the heir, he was the king that came in the line of succession he took over for Nebuchadnezzar. There's even Midrashim that say that really he was a blood descendant of Nebuchadnezzar, but he was illegitimate and he was thrown out of the palace. But be that as it may, all of the Goliaths that Bnei Yisrael found themselves in were all descendants, and they came as a result of the original Golos of Bavel. Bavel's job, or Bavel's animosity to us, was demonstrated by their taking away the Malchus. We had Melucha, we had Malchus. Bavel came and took that away. When it finished with Bavel, it went to Paras and Madai and Yavan. And ultimately, it reverted back to the other half of Bavel, which is Amalek, and that's Adayim Ezeh, what's called Golos Edoim. That's where we are. So here we have Achashverosh on one hand, and Reitzin Haman is Haman. Haman is the representative of Amalek. He stands in for his grandfather Agag, Esav. So here we mamish have the combination once again of Balak and Bilam, Bavel and Amalek. So let's examine what was the koyach of Bilam, and then we will come to understand a little bit about the koyach of Amalek. Bilam, as the Gemara in Brachas tells us, had this ability to tap into the moment of zam, of anger, of din, that the Rebbeinu Shleilim allows in the world every day. Every day in the world is a single moment, tiny moment. It's called a rega. The Gemara calls it a rega. If I'm not mistaken, the Gemara says it's 158,888th part of the day. That's the existence of this rega. That's how long it lasts. And nobody is able to tap into that power. If you can tap into the power of Hashem's anger and Midas Hadin, you can destroy the world. Nobody could do it except for Bilam. Bilam had this ability. And that's what he was trying to do. When Bilam tried to destroy us, he was trying to destroy us using this kayach of Kel Zoyim Chol Yoyim. That the Rebbeinu Shalom gets angry every day, and I'm going to use that against the Bnei Yisrael. The Gemara continues over there and says, when in the day does this moment occur? When does this rega occur? It happens b'shas zricha, at the time of zrichas Hashemesh, when the sun comes up, k'shamalchei mizrichu mayrav b'shtachavim l'Hashemesh. When the kings of east and west bow down to the sun. What does it mean that the kings of east and west are bowing down to the sun? What does it mean to bow to the sun? It means that you're declaring that you are Ovid, the sun, you worship the sun, even if not the sun specifically, but the idea of the sun, which is the idea of Teva in the world. Every morning the sun comes up, every morning the sun goes down. You bow to that. That's your God. That's where you connect to in the scheme of the world. You don't believe there's something beyond that. You connect to this, the idea of the Teva of the world, that in itself, why does Rebbeinu Shalom have a moment of anger at that time? Because obviously that's connected to what we understand. We have the Ramban, the famous Ramban, and many, many Sfarim that talk about this, that of course there's no such thing as Teva, and everything that seems like Teva in the world, Ein bo Eloi Mikra, the Lashon of the Ramban is Ein Behem Teva, Umenhogi Shaloylam. Our faith is, we believe that Kulam Nisim, everything is Nisim. Even that which seems like Teva is really Nisim. So at the moment of Zrichas HaShemesh, when the kings of the world, of Mizrach and Ma'ariv, bow down to the sun, they bow down to the Teva, that triggers Rebbeinu Shlom's anger for that second. Now, we see then a connection between this Zam, this anger of the Rebbeinu Shlom, that it comes about as a result of the Hishtabdus, that people are subjugating themselves to the Teva of the world. What's the connection, other than we just explained? What else is deeper than that? So it's not random. It's not as if it just happens to be that the Rebbeinu Shlom gets angry, so to speak. The idea of the Rebbeinu Shlom's anger is really the Midas HaDin. There's a relationship between Midas HaDin and Teva, nature. What the whole world refers to as nature, there's a relationship between the two. What's the relationship? They are both sets of immutable, unbreakable laws with direct causality, meaning both in Teva and in Midas HaDin, we find the concept of A causes B, and as a result, that causes C, and it's very direct, and it's very Mida connected Mida. For example, in Teva, in nature, if you throw a ball a certain height with a certain amount of force, it's going to rise to a certain height, and it's going to describe a particular arc or parabola, right? It's very predictable. If you know exactly how much force you're putting into the toss of the ball, and you know the state of the how much friction it's going to endure, then you know exactly how far it's going to go. You can do it mathematically. It's never going to change. As long as all the factors are known and understood before, the calculation can be made, and it will always happen the same way. The reason why sometimes a ball goes further or not further is because there's factors that affect it differently. How hard the person threw it, how heavy the air was, what exact shape of the ball. But once you know the factors that go into it, that's going to happen. If you throw something up in the air, gravity says it's going to fall down every single time. It might take a little longer, it might take a little shorter. It's always going to happen. The same thing is with Midas Hadin. Midas Hadin says, if you do A, the result is B. And it's always going to happen. It's going to happen immediately. Because Midas Hadin is a set of rules. Nature is a set of rules. Nature is din. It's dinim, it's laws. Even in the secular world, we talk about the laws of nature. What are laws? Laws are din. Which is why, as we all know, there's even the same name of Hashem, which represents both ideas. Right? The Midas Hadin is represented by the Shem Elokim. Nature is also governed by the Shem Elokim, which is why Hateva equals Elokim. That's Yidua from the Arizal. So we see that there's a real connection here, that Din and Teva are two sides of a single coin. Esav connects himself to the idea of Din, he connects himself to Teva. Now, what do we know about Din? Let's take it one step further, and then we'll try to pull it all together. It says that the Ribbono Shel Olam originally wanted to create the world with Din. Right? He wanted to create the world using only Midas Hadin. What's the maila of doing that? That enables perfect giving of schar. Person does good, he gets exactly what he did. He does bad, he gets what he did. We earn our keep, just like we understand that the purpose of being in this world and the ultimate goal is that we should earn what we are given. We don't want to get presents from Hashem. We don't want to just get what's called nama de kisufa, the bread of embarrassment. Hashem should do just chesed with us. We want to earn our keep. So too, the world was meant to be created in that way, exactly according to the lines of Din. Whatever you do, you get. That was the kavana that the Ribbono Shel Olam had. He wanted to initially make. Rosh Ha'inu Miskayim, he saw that a world like that will not last because people are imperfect and they will mess up before they have a chance to bring themselves to their tikkun, to their perfection. The world won't last. So Shitavim Midas HaRachamim, so he partnered with the Midas HaDin, Midas HaRachamim. This means that a world purely of Din would have no Hemshech, would have no continuation. It would stop as soon as it started. It started, boom, a second later it's over. Because somebody misbehaved, somebody didn't do the right thing, and Din demands immediate retribution, immediate results, just like nature does. If you bang your head into a wall, you can't complain about it and say, oh, you know, it's not fair, why is my head hurting? The wall didn't do anything to you. That's what you did. You banged your head in the wall. That's what Din would have done to the world. It would have been destroyed immediately. The Midah that allows for a continuation, a Hemshech of the world, is the Midah of Rachamim. Din does not allow for continuation. Rachamim allows continuation. Rachamim says, it's true that you did something and the natural, the teva result would be that you immediately get punished and the retribution comes instantaneously. Rachim, we're going to wait. Hashem's going to have Rachmanus. In other words, says the Maharal, the thing that allows for a tomorrow, for a machar, is Rachim. Rachamim extends the existence beyond the moment, beyond the rega. Din can only last the rega, because if Din lasted for more than the most minuscule rega, it destroys itself and it destroys the world with it. Din could never be more than a rega. More than a rega, to extend the world further than a rega, that requires rachamim. That requires the allowance of looking away. Rachmanus. The person deserves a punishment. Have rachmanus. That's the midah of rachamim. But it's not only a midah of rachamim, of rachmanus, it's the very thing that allows us to continue. Now, what Bilam was doing, Bilam said, I want it to be a world of kulei din. Meaning, I want to take that rega of din and I want to extend it. I want that din shouldn't stop before it destroys the world. I want it to destroy the world. Particularly, I want it to destroy the world known as Bnei Yisrael. The Rebbeinu Shel Olam created the world, created it with Bereishis. Bereishis Bara Elokim. Who is Reishis? Reishis is Bnei Yisrael. Bishvil Yisrael Shenikru Reishis. We are called Reishis. Most of the letters of Reishis are in our name, Yisrael. We're called Reishis, says Bilam. By the Reishis of the world, Hashem wanted to create it with Din, but he knew that that would destroy the Reishis. I want to take the little bit of Din that exists every day and Taka destroy the Reishis with that. And that's dumb. But because I have a different Reishis in mind. My Reishis is the Reishis Goyim Amalek. There's another Reishis. Bilam said this as well. He saw Amalek, it says, and he said, Reishis Goyim Amalek. We'll see in a minute the end of Amalek, though. Now, the way, what did Hashem do to counteract this plan of Bilam? It says that he canceled. That's for that Tekufa, there was no din at all. Even the half a split second of din that normally existed, Rabbeinu Shel Olam canceled it. Now, perhaps we'll explain that soon. At the end of the shir, we'll explain what happened when the Rabbeinu Shel Olam canceled the Zam. But Amalek, who is the spiritual heir of Bilam, he's drawn from and he's drawn to that rega. Reishis Goyim Amalek, you'll notice, is Rashi Tevis, is brought in the Hafla, the Shlah brings it. Reishis Goyim Amalek is rega. There was a rega of Zam, there was a Reishis Goyim Amalek of Zam. They're part of the Reishis. But, Achrisam Adei Oived, Itaka, just like Din, can only exist for the most minuscule amount of time, because it destroys itself. So to Amalek, Achrisam Adei Oived, they destroy themselves as well. So it comes out like this, that a future, this is only possible through Rachamim. The Maral, as I mentioned before, says that Mochar is the concept of allowing a tomorrow. That happens because only when you have Rachim, when you have Rachmanis mixed into the equation, not only mixed in, but it has to become the major part. It's 58,887 parts, as opposed to one part of Din. That's the right mix. That allows the world to exist. He says, you find this echoed in another similar word, unbelievable idea. He says, Rechem, the Rechem. The Rechem is the place, right, which carries the child. That's where a mother, that's where the ultimate, who's the greatest Rachman in the world, besides the Rabbeinu Shel Olam, is a mother. Every mother on her own child has the ultimate Rachmanis, Kula Rachmanis, unless there's something very wrong with her psychologically. She has tremendous Rachmanis on her child. Where does she carry that child? In the Rechem. What does the Rechem allow? It allows a Mochar, the next generation, the genealogical future of the world is children. The Mochar of the world, the future of the world are the children, and they're carried where? In the Rechem. And that Rechem brings about the Rachmanis. Very interesting that sometimes if you play with the world, with the words, with the letters of a word, so as we know that many times the same letters, just organized differently, can have a very similar meaning. Or sometimes, if you mix them up in a different way, they can have the precise opposite meaning. You can use a marshal of a magnet. If you hold two magnets next to each other, if the poles are aligned properly, they attract. But if you turn them into a different configuration, they repel, they push away. Because letters are energies. The ruchniyistika energy that cause realities. They create realities in the world. So organize them in one way and they create one thing. Organize them differently, they may create something similar, or they may create something that's precisely the opposite. If you take the letters of Rechem or Rachem and you organize it just a little bit differently, you come up with the word Cherem. What's a Cherem? A Cherem is somebody that's removed from society. There's no rachmanis on him. You can't interact with him. The Gemara sometimes calls a friend by the word rachami, my rachim, the person who's merachim on me, my friend, my rachami. What's somebody who's in chayrim? He's the person who has no friends. You're not allowed to come within his dalaramis, you can't have any shaykhs to him. With this understanding that rachmanus, the idea of rachamim, is the force that prolongs the world, that allows the world to have an existence beyond just a rega of din. That's the force that also gives us a future, and that's the force that battles Amalek. Amalek wants everything right now. Amalek wants to live in this world. He doesn't want to wait to the future. You find that Esav, the grandpa of Amalek, he sold his Bechayra. Bechayra included brachas, included avoid in the base of Middash, and included the world to come, included Olam Haba. Say Chazal, he sold the Bechayra because he said, I only want this world. I don't care about Olam Haba. He's Kaifer by Olam Haba. What happened? He lost this world as well. He lost the brachas. He lost the brachas, which it turned out were Gashmias. He went nuts. He said, whoa, that I didn't sell. Yaakov tricked me. I thought I was telling him that he has to work in the Beis HaMikdash. Some imaginary next world he's thinking about, but this world? His father said, yeah. You don't get this world either, because if you approach the world with Midas Hadin, and you do it improperly, then this world can't exist for you either. The only Hatzalah that Esav had was that for the time that Yaakov or his descendants misbehave and they're not worthy of the brachas, Esav can sort of take hold of them. He gets our scraps when we mess up, but there's no bracha attached to Esav at all because he's Midas Adin, but he's not a good Midas Adin. Just as an example, good Midas Adin, somebody who lived Midas Adin in the correct way, in the fullest way, that was Yitzchak. Yitzchak was also Midas Adin. But he was the Midas Adin that he managed to control himself and he managed to really master himself to such a degree that even his dying was living. Even when he was by that Kedah, and the Medrash says that his neshama actually went out from him and he was, could be it was only for a short time, could be it was, says he was 3 years in Gan Eden according to one man, Omar. But he was living even when he was dead. Because he, Taka, lived according to that original plan of the world. Of Chishev, Livres, Oilim, and Midas Adin, that Rabbi Nishlan planned to build the world according to the Seder of Midas Adin. Esav took that from his father, but he looked at the Midas Adin differently. I heard once from Moshe Shapiro, he said, Esav said, what is Midas Adin? Midas Adin is that which is must be so. There's no options. There's no playing around. I did something. The result must occur in a specific way. Esav looked at himself and said, if I'm here, if I exist, then I must exist. I'm not here by mikra. I'm not here because it just happened to occur this way. It's mechuyev hametzius. And just like there, I am mechuyev hametzius, the only thing we find that's mechuyev hametzius that must exist is the Rabbanei Shlalim. So if I am here and I exist and I am mechuyev hametzius, then I'm no less than God. And that was the beginning of his kvira. Interestingly, you find that Haman also, as his downfall began, he started to get concerned about what? Says he came home after taking Mordechai around, leading Mordechai around the city on a horse and having to be mechabed Mordechai. Says he came home and he told his wife and his advisors, "Es kol asher karohu." Everything that happened to him, but the Lashon of Karohu means everything that happened to him b'mikra, by happenstance. It was the happenstance that got to him, and that's what they answered him. They said, "Im mizera Yehudim." If this is Mordechai and he's mizera Yehudim and he's loyal to the Zera Yehudim, then you're done for. They knew he was a Jew. It was no chiddush that he was Zera Yehudim. But the chiddush was that he was still loyal to it, then you're finished. Because Esav's mahalach, there was no mikra, everything was planned. That everything was Iska Cheshman, and he had contingencies upon contingencies, and it all fell apart. because the Rebbeinu Shlomo mixed in a little of his midas harachmanis, a little of his midas ha mikra, which means mikra, say is Loshon Mikor, that it comes from the original source of everything, not from the teva, not from the nature of the world. Once the Rebbeinu Shlomo mixes that in, then the people who make plans, they're finished. Right? The ultimate plan, if you want to know when something was really planned, wait till it happens by coincidence. Then you know it was really planned, just not by you, it was planned by the Rebbeinu Shlomo. That's the ultimate planner. So that was what Esav was afraid of. Esav could not exist in a world of Mikra. He didn't want to exist in a world of Mikra. This could explain our original questions. Why did Esther make this party, go through all the trouble and the toil and the tircha and the fear and the danger, taka, of meeting Achashverosh, set it all up and then say, okay, come back tomorrow. You'll see what happens tomorrow. Right? Why did Moshe Rabbeinu tell Yeshua, go fight with Amalek, say hilochim ba'amalek, when? Mochar, tomorrow. And again, at the end of the Megillah, like we said, Esther requested another day to fight Amalek. It could be, the reason is this, like we said, the idea of Mochar, the idea of Hemshech, of continuation, of there being a future beyond the immediate din and the immediate tit for tat of Teva and of din, that's how we fight Amalek. We fight Amalek with the realization that the Rebbeinu Shel Olam is there for us when we ask him to be there for us, and he applies the Midas HaRachmanus, and that Midas HaRachmanus of the Rebbeinu Shel Olam overcomes all Teva and overcomes all plans and overcomes all Midas Adins that there are. Ultimately, you have to get back to a Midas Adin. The way we're going to eventually get our schar is taka through din. That's what the Rebbeinu Shel Olam wants. But it requires tremendous helping of Midas HaChesed to allow us to get there in the way the Rebbeinu Shel Olam wants us to get there. This could stam derech agav explain why everything takes so long, right? Why isn't the world, where's Mashiach already? Where is he? Because there's such a huge mixture of tomorrow and of taking time till we get it right, that it just takes time. To expect things to become perfect today or yesterday or even tomorrow, that's a lot to expect. That's a tremendous helping of Midas Adin. We don't operate with Midas Adin. We operate as Jews with Midas Rachmanis. The sign of a Jew is Rachmanim. That's the sign of a Yid. The Nosel L'chor Rachamim V'Richamcho Shteitim Posek Kash Nishmat L'Av Yisecho. That's our Yerusha from our forefathers, is that we have the Midas Rachamim. But in all senses we have this Midas Rachamim. That could be the Pshat. Why we needed a Mochar, and why Esther always requested a Mochar to fight against Amaleks. Reishis Goyim Amalek Achrisam Adei Oyveid. Their Reishis is like a very strong Reishis. They live in this world in a very strong way, a very logical, planned out, strong way. But Achrisam Adei Oyveid, they have no Hemshech. It's very interesting. I mentioned before that the Shlosh says Reishis Goyim Amalek is the Rosh HaTevis Rega. That's the Rega of Din that Bilam wanted to tap into. You'll notice that Achrisam Adei Oyved is Aleph Ayin Aleph. Their end, though, is destruction. Aleph is 1, Ayin is 70, Aleph is again 172. That's Gematria of the word Chesed. Our Chesed destroys their Din. The Din of Amalek, the Rega, the Reishis Goyim Amalek is destroyed and becomes Achrisam Adei Oyved.